Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Think about the last time you had a cancel subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hello, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge. It's the start of another week. Manchester United have won. Hope you're all doing well. The Christmas tree is up. It's December the 1st. What do you get in your calendar? I'll tell you mine in a moment. And it was, I can't tell you at 10 a.m. what I got in my calendar because it was a special side type of calendar. But talking about calendars and gifts and treats, Ruben Amorim has apparently made his mind up on the January transfer window. It's midfield, it's maybe a wing back, but it won't be a striker. We've also been linked to two Real Madrid midfielders. Is that actually a possibility? Would you actually do that? But primarily, the poll is running. It's Ederson or Conor Gallagher. We'll talk about the stories that are coming out about them in a moment. Also, why Amorim won't be looking at a striker now. The re-emergence of Xerxes. Is that right? You know, half-time yesterday, people would have been saying, get a striker. Now people are saying, don't get a striker because of a very good moment. Is that sufficient for Man United over the next few weeks with Sesko? I hope it is. I like Xerxes and I think he deserves a chance, as I think do many other players as well. I've also got some interesting comments coming out from Ruben Amorim about the difficulty of the job and how it's bigger than he expected. Is that naivety or is that just United in 2025? Also, a few bits around the ownership, what's going on there? And obviously, get your comments in as always. But I just want to, the reason, you know, it's Monday, it's Christmas, it's a great time of the year. We've got, I think, two very winnable games coming up. Obviously, I'm not going to take them for granted. But I was also laughing to myself about 5 minutes ago because I was on social media just scouting around to see if there's anything else to bring into the show. And oh my God, I saw a tweet and it just made me chuckle. I thought it was sarcasm at first, but then I read it and they actually meant it. So basically, the second goal yesterday, they were basically trying to claim that the goal that Mount scored was all because of the brilliance of Bruno Fernandes. Now, this puts it on a scale of Phil Foden's assist for England, right? Crystal Palace's wall makes a massive mistake. If it does its job, it doesn't go in. And Mason Mount shoots for the near post, hoping that they're going to make a mistake and jump, etc. So if anybody, I would say it's 25%, 30% on the Crystal Palace wall making a mistake. And it's, you know, 60% Mount getting it into the bottom corner. Bruno just plays a 2-yard pass. I just think sometimes it just makes me laugh how people, Player FC, glaze people. Like, you know, it's an assist for Bruno, but come on. It's a little roll pass. It's Mount and the Crystal Palace wall that makes the mistake. Trying to claim, I mean, I've seen Bruno, I think Bruno's assist for Xerxes is better than that. At least he purposely puts it into Xerxes. Xerxes does all the work, but I think his assist for Xerxes is better than that. Anyway, let's get on with the show. I've got some Bruno fans in the chat going, no, it was brilliant by Bruno. Robas says, no, Mark, Mason saw how the wall wasn't organised and had gaps. I know, I literally just said 70% of it was Mason Mount. We need to be owners out, not managers out, says G9. That will never happen. And Tia, welcome to Members Club. Thanks for getting your badge in so early on a Monday at the start of the week. You're an absolute legend. Thank you for supporting the channel and getting your badge in and joining the community. Okay, we've got a poll going out at the moment. Who would you prefer to sign in January, Edison or Gallagher? It looks like Ruben Amorim has made his decision on the January transfer window. And I think, although I don't really want to talk about the Palace game in great depth because we've done it to death, I think we learnt a lot yesterday about the January transfer window. Ruben Amorim said something before the game about wanting an Ahmad on the left-hand side, which I think is really interesting, and we'll talk about that. But I think his actions in the game also showed that he 100% wants a midfielder. We want a midfielder. And I think Ruben Amorim wants one as well. He definitely wanted one in the summer. We went for Baleba, we went for Gallagher, we didn't get either. So he's still going to want one now. But I think the way he utilises Ugarte and Mainoo, it's crystal clear that they are not part of his plans and he doesn't trust them. And we're not creating a debate point here. We're not creating an argument. We're not being divisive. You know, we can all see it. The midfield isn't very good. It didn't play well against Everton and it didn't play well in the first half yesterday. And at no point did he think or consider to bring Mainoo or Ugarte in for Casemiro and Bruno at halftime or start of the game or for Everton either. So they're not part of his plans. And he clearly wants a midfielder. So if anybody's out there going, we don't need a midfielder in January, one, where have you been? And two, even if you think four are enough, he doesn't use two of them. So Amorim's made it very, very clear in his actions that he wants another midfielder, at least one, and he probably wants two, one in the summer as well. So the latest coming out this morning, and we're going to start off with Edison, is that Edison's agent has come out and said the price for Edison has dropped as his contract expires in 2027. He's available now for 30 to 40 million euros, a big opportunity for sure. Atalanta wanted 70 million euros last summer. Fabrizio Romano has also confirmed that Manchester United are interested in Edison and have him on their target list as they have done before. He says Edison has been in the list of Manchester United for a long time. He was a target a year ago. Then it was not possible to get the deal done with Atalanta in January 2025, which is what they tried to do as well. The agent is now saying the contract of Edison is valid until 2027. So look, we've got the agent of Edison saying that he's available for 30 to 40 million euros. Now, in pounds, that's less than 40 million pounds. If he's available for 35 million euros, that's 30 million. If it's 40 million euros, that's around 33. So that's a very good deal for a player that I think he's around 25, 26 now. And the most interesting thing about this is that Fabrizio is saying that United went for him a year ago. Obviously, Amorim wasn't there then. But he also said it wasn't possible to get a deal done in January 2025. So that's where this gets interesting for me, because I've always felt with Edison, he was a previous regime target. So we're talking Ten Hag and we're talking Ineos, but Ten Hag. If we went for him in January, which is what Fabrizio is saying, that's Ineos still, but it's Amorim. And that's where this now starts to get interesting. And this is where I think you've got to consider Edison, because I've always felt that Edison was a little bit like Milinkovic-Savic with Mourinho. He still kept getting linked to us under Oli, but it was a Mourinho target. I completely agree that Edison's on the Ineos list. I don't think it's a Glazer thing. I think it's an Ineos thing, but it was under Ten Hag. So if we've gone for him in January as well, that was Amorim. So I think that makes it very interesting, and that obviously brings him into the category, because I think what I'm looking at in January is it's not a case of if we're going to sign a midfielder or do we need a midfielder. It's like we have to sign a midfielder. And if we hit February the 1st and we haven't, Amorim's been let down again, because he's only really using two midfielders. He's using Bruno and Casemiro religiously, and he uses Mainoo and Ugarte if he absolutely has to for half an hour or 20 minutes. So he hasn't got three midfielders. He's got two. And he needs a midfielder in January. And if João Gomes, like David Ornstein said last week, is not an option, and it'd be interesting to see how he plays against us on Monday, then surely we're working on options. And I think that Mainoo has to get loaned out, Luke, has to get loaned out. But bringing Ederson into the equation, I think, is very exciting. We all know about Ederson because we've been linked to Ederson for quite a long time. He essentially probably fits the way we play better than he did Ten Hag, because with Ten Hag, he was, we're playing with a midfield three. So is Ederson an eight? Is he a six? Or is he a, he's not a 10? I think Ederson is a player in a midfield pivot. I think when you have a midfield three, and I like a midfield three, you tend to have an attacking midfielder, a box-to-box, and a more defensive midfielder. I think in a midfield pivot, you can balance that out better. All action. And I think Ederson is that type of player. He's a bit like Belaba in the sense that Belaba is at his best, can be in that pivot. And I think Ederson the same in the job that he does for Atalanta, and he's having a good season as well. That energy in a midfield pivot, I think it'd be very interesting. Now, whether he can transfer that from Serie A into the Premier League, and he's only just 26, by the way. He was 26 in July. So look, I like this. I'm not saying it's better than João Gomes. I'm not saying it's better than Conor Gallagher, who we'll talk about at a moment. But, 65% of you would go with Ederson over Gallagher at the moment on the vote we've got in the chat. I welcome this type of a story. Like, as I say, it's not a will we, should we, do we need to, we have to. We have to sign a midfielder in January. I know there's a lot of talk about buying players in the summer, the Adam Whartons, the Elliot Andersons, the Belabers, but we need a player in January. Like, you look at that league table like we were looking at last night, and it's opportunist. And I think that if I could change Bruno and Casemiro tomorrow, I think we'd have a better team. But if we can change one of them, we'll have a bit, we will be better. And we need to be better in the second half of the season. I was thinking about this morning. Under no circumstances do I think we can replicate this start to the season in the second half of the season. I don't think it's going to get us where we need to be. And I'm all for being positive. And I know there's a bit of, debate in the fan base, a bit of conflict in the fan base at the moment about just be positive and get behind the team, or no, it's fucking rubbish. I like us winning, but it's rubbish. I think both of those arguments are valid. I don't have an issue with either of them. However, what I would say personally is, how we've played from August to now, if we do it in the second half of the season, I just think we're playing with fire. I think there has to be, what I'm saying is, if we do this the whole season, I think we're running the risk. We might throw a six and get into the top five, but we might also keep throwing ones and not get enough. And I think that if in January you improve your team, you improve your chances. It's as simple as that. Kiel says, buy Ederson, loan Gallagher, sell Ugarte, loan out Mainoo. I want to talk about the Gallagher story that's coming in, because it looks like that could be done now. But obviously, the more business we can do in January, the better. I've seen Chelsea do a lot of business in January. Look at where they are now. I've seen Man City do a lot of business in January. Look at where they are now. We've seen Liverpool do business in January. Look at where they are now. Man United consistently don't do business in January, and look at where we are. We ignore something that everybody else utilises at the top of the table now. I agree that the January transfer window was sort of about desperation. If you didn't get what you needed to get done in the summer, or if you had an injury, even that fits the quota, because we didn't get what we needed to get done in the summer. So we should still be using the January window. But I think over the last couple of years, we've actually seen that people don't treat it like desperation. People use it as an opportunity, a shortened transfer window to move players out, move players in, and help yourself prepare for next season, or also help yourself in this season. So we can't just keep pushing it into the summer and saying we only focus on the summer. It's like getting into, I genuinely think now, you've got the summer transfer window, you've got the January transfer window. In a boxing sense, the summer transfer window is your strong hand, and your January transfer window is your weaker hand, but it can still throw punches. If you go into the ring and you don't use January transfer window, you're basically fighting with your one strong hand. Is that going to be enough? You've got to get your other hand up as well. And I think that's what the January transfer window has become. And United definitely do need to utilise it. Charlie, Garrison, welcome to the members club. Two new members this morning. Thanks for getting your badge in, mate. You're an absolute legend. Kai says, Bruno seems to be the only one not allowed to make a mistake. He's had the highest pass accuracy among all players on the pitch versus Everton and Crystal Palace, says Kai. How's your Bruno poster on the wall, Kai? I'm just asking out of interest because I bloody know it's there. I mean, look, mate, the reason in life you get scrutinised if you are the best is because your standards are higher than everybody else's. If Manchester United lose a game, why do the media... So let's say on a typical Premier League weekend, Man United lose a game and Burnley lose a game. Why do the media just talk about Man United and not about Burnley? We've both lost the game because Man United are bigger, better and have a better reputation. Bruno Fernandes gets more scrutiny because we pay him 300 grand a week. He's the captain of the team and he's meant to be the best player. So that's why he gets scrutinised. If you don't like it, get out of the kitchen. If you can't stand the heat, get off the toilet. It's as simple as that. I'm just explaining it to you. Keel Robinson says, oh, we've done that one as well. Agate be gone in January and get both midfielders, says Bale. We can all blame Amrin for not doing enough, but did Ineos approach last summer window like a club desperately in pursuit of top four? No, they didn't, Danny Esther. Comment of the day so far. Absolutely spot on. I love that. So I think with regards to Edison, let's bring him into the equation. Now, the second story involves Conor Gallagher this morning. And effectively, what is being said from Football Insider is that Atletico Madrid would be open to parting with Gallagher in the January window if they get a suitable fee. Man United and Tottenham are interested in the former Chelsea player who could be available for just 26 million. Amrin has approved the signing of the English player as he's desperate to improve his United midfield. And I think, look, I'm not going to use a direct quote from an outlet to say that Amrin is desperate to sign a midfielder, because rarely they will have that direct quote. But I think consequentially, we can take that and say, well, it actually is accurate because we can see he's desperate to buy a midfielder. He's, you know, at half-time yesterday, I think most managers, if they had a midfielder they liked, would have made a change. It was abysmal. After the Everton game on Monday, most managers would have changed that midfield if he had somebody he trusted. He doesn't trust Mainoo and Agate. So he is desperate for a midfielder, absolutely. And if Conor Gallagher... Look, he wanted Conor Gallagher in the summer. Whether you like it or I like it or anyone else likes it, we did do talks with Conor Gallagher in the last 2 weeks of the August transfer window. It's established as fact by all the big journalists and everybody in the industry. Man United, panicking or not, did try to do something with Conor Gallagher in the last 2 weeks of the window, which means Amrin sanctioned it. So keep your eye on that player. Look, 65% of you want Edison over Gallagher. I get it. But that is a player that is available in January that Man United could move on. And what I would say about that is, I don't mind if we go for Edison over Gallagher. I don't mind if we go for João Gomes over Gallagher. But if we go for nobody and Gallagher goes to Spurs, what does that say? That can't happen. That's all I'm going to say about this. I've always said we need a midfielder in January and it won't be the star midfielder that we're going to have to get in the summer. It needs to be somebody that Amrin wants that improves us in January. We can't not do anything. So if I see Conor Gallagher signing for Crystal Palace or Spurs and we don't buy a midfielder, that's a bloody joke. That is a joke. Now, am I comfortable with us spending £26 million on him? Ideally, it's a loan. You know, it's what Barcelona have done with Rashford. It's try before you buy. Ideally, that's what it is. However, we're Manchester United and it doesn't always work out like that. And sometimes... we didn't get to try. My point is, I think a lot of people in the chat are saying we can't spend 26 million. It's got to be a loan. We didn't loan Cunha. We didn't loan Mbeumo. And we didn't loan... well, the most important one is we didn't loan Sesko. We spent £68 million on Sesko and the jury is out. So, you know, if you've scouted the player and you've looked at the player and you think he's a good fit, £26 million is not a lot of money. So... if it's a choice between no midfielder or £26 million on Conor Gallagher, I'll spend the £26 million. Because I can't, as long as Amrin wants him, I can't see how it puts us in a worse position than now. Do I think I'd rather play Mainoo, yes, but I'm not Ruben Amorim. Ruben Amorim doesn't want to use Mainoo, and he doesn't want to use Ugarte. Mainoo, for his own career, has to go out on loan in January, and we need to bring a midfielder in that he wants to use. So, look, my biggest concern in the January transfer window is going to be, are they going to sign anybody in January? That's the biggest concern. The fact that we've got a couple of players that both look viable and are both available in January is a big, big positive to me. Somebody just said, do you see us getting any of the main targets? Elliot Anderson's not going to go. He'd be foolish, and Forrest won't let it happen. What I will say about Forrest, though, is, and we keep hearing about Elliot Anderson being 80 million, etc. I'm not going to forget what Ben Jacobs said a few weeks ago about him being less than 70. So I don't know how that's going to work, but that's not going to happen in January. Adam Wharton won't happen in January. Belaba, I don't think Brighton will do it in January. Look, Elliot Anderson, no chance. Wharton, no chance. Belaba, some chance. Stiller, maybe chance. But you can't buy Stiller while you've got Bruno here, because Stiller is a midfielder who basically does Bruno's job better. And we're not going to drop Bruno. We're not going to remove Bruno until the summer. So Stiller would have to be a summer signing, even if we did it. So for me, the only one that's distinctly possible out of the, you know, the main targets is Belaba. If Brighton just go, let's just cash in now. I was speaking to somebody about this last week, and I said, look, Brighton clearly made a mistake with Belaba in the way that they valued him. They wanted 100 million. We had the talks. We wanted to pay 60. And they will not know. In hindsight, we're all geniuses. But I think if Brighton had took £60 million, we would have been... It's a funny world. If we'd have got Belaba for £60 million, knowing what we know now, we'd still think that might be a risk. But if we'd got him for £60 million in the summer, we would have been going, we've mugged Brighton off. And that's the funny thing about football, isn't it? You can't change the past. And you can't criticise Brighton for not wanting 60 million, because at that time, you did think he might be an 80 to 100 million pound player. Whereas if we'd spent 60 million pounds on him now, we'd be going, ooh, that's a risk. So I don't know. Maybe Brighton look at it and go, OK, we'll take 60 in January. And maybe United go, no, we'll give you 40. So I don't think a deal with Brighton can't be done in January because Brighton are going to want 100. Those days are gone. I just don't think Man United would want to pay 60 at the moment. So I think agreeing a fee is going to be the difficult point. What I'm trying to say is I'm not sure Man United want Belaba in January at the moment, because I think they're probably looking at it going, I don't know what his value is right now, considering what he's doing. I mean, look, as I said to you last night, he came on for 4 minutes in their away win against Forest yesterday. That's a very good result for Brighton, and they didn't use Belaba. He has been being subbed off a lot. Now he's not even starting. So Belaba is becoming Brighton's Mainoo. Look, dare I say it, do they want Mainoo and we'll have Belaba on loan and see how it goes? You know, I think it would be perfect for both parties. I think Mainoo at Brighton would be brilliant. And I think Belaba on loan... look, football doesn't work like that. However... somebody mentioned it ages ago, and I actually think it's an amazingly brilliant take. Loan Mainoo to Brighton, and we'll have Belaba. We get to try. Mainoo gets minutes. I think it would be brilliant, but it's not going to happen because, to be honest with you, it's just way, way, way too logical, but it would be brilliant. Or Ugarte, if Brighton want Ugarte, you know, I think it would be great. But look, you know my stance on Belaba. I wouldn't be going anywhere near him anyway at the moment, but I'd definitely take him on loan, and I'd give them Mainoo. And look, you know what? Who gets the better deal there? Brighton would probably go, forget it. He's way more valuable than that. But I actually don't think you get the bad deal there. You might get the better deal. Mainoo on loan and Belaba to us, you might get the better deal. Like, Mainoo might be just bloody brilliant again in your system. I mean, the way Brighton play, they play through the midfield. They don't bypass the midfield. I think Mainoo at Brighton could be a bloody clever deal. I mean, imagine if Brighton said, OK, we'll do a loan to buy £60 million for Belaba and £60 million for Mainoo. We'll have them on loan to buys, and then in the summer, we'll do it. They could end up with the better deal. They could. Imagine if Mainoo went to Brighton permanently and we got Belaber. Belaber is shit and Mainoo goes back to being what he was. Mainoo's off to Liverpool or something else in 18 months. So, look, I'm not here to act on Brighton's half and I have made mistakes. However, I think, and we're completely speculating here. There's no story about it at all. But if I was Brighton, I would be saying, can we have Mainoo on loan and you can have Belaibu? Let's work towards it, you know? And he'll get developed at Brighton in a style of football that will develop him. How come you're so against Belaibu? Because he's had a bad start, but Gallagher is literally not wanted by Atletico. He's not good enough for us either, says Jordan. Well, there's a price difference, Jordan, for a start. And also, we were talking about Conor Gallagher on loan. So, and also, Belaibu was being quoted at £80 million. And Belaibu has been absolutely horseshit this season. So, you know, it's just different opinions, I suppose, Jordan. There you go. Morning, legends, says Tom Grant. Thank you very much for your super chat, Tom. Hope you're doing well. In regards to your comment yesterday, we play every game like we play on like we played on Thursday. Plus, I think Brentford striker Thiago would be a great backup. That midfield is a Pandora's box, says Tom Grant. Yeah, don't forget, Man United are playing on Thursday. I don't think I said we play every game like we play on a Thursday. I think I said that Crystal Palace played like we did last season. They just died on their arse in the second half, which was to our benefit. But I don't think our problem is that. I don't think our problem is a fitness problem. I just think it's a light switch problem, and you just never know what you're going to get. You say Pandora's box, I say Forrest Gump's box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. Amrabat is a good example of why Gallagher is a loan deal, says Cameron. Amrim needs to call out the owners like Glasner did, says Old Trafford. And Simply Red says, why does it seem like Xerxes has to move mountains to convince Amrim? Sesko nor Cunha have put on a better showing as a number nine. I think he can be better than them, says Simply Red.
Now it's time for a little word from today's podcast sponsor. And as a preview, they have a great discount for you. It's been a long season so far, and after a year of grinding, you've earned a little something special for yourself. This upcoming festive season is all about taking a break, recharging, and actually enjoying the things you want. And that's where Air Up comes in. Air Up lets you drink plain water that tastes full of flavour through scent alone. No sugar, no additives, just simple hydration made better. And for someone who spends as much time talking football as I do, it's been a great addition to the routine. If you want to try it for yourself, hit the link in the show notes or visit airup.link/theunitedstand. And of course, you can use the code GOLD and you get an amazing 10% off at checkout. So what are you waiting for? Smash the link in the show notes or visit airup.link/theunitedstand and elevate your hydration game today.
Well, there's a couple of Real Madrid players we've been linked to, which I will speak about in a moment. But I do want to just talk about Xerxes because I'm so pleased for Xerxes. I've always been a really, I'll be fair, I wouldn't say Xerxes was a player that I went, this guy's going to be amazing. But I liked the signing of Xerxes under Ten Hag. And I just feel like his career never got going. The first year he was always going back to Italy. Then he decided to stay in the January. Then he got injured after doing quite well. And now he's only just getting back into the team, but we're talking about moving him on in January again. I think history is going to repeat itself. I think a player that we think is going to go in January is actually not going to go in January. I think that from an Ineos and Glazer point of view, they're rubbing their hands saying we don't need a striker now. I personally was saying we need an experienced striker in January, ASAP, because I'm not sure Sesko can carry the burden and Xerxes wasn't getting game time. I think the timing of this with the AFCON coming up means that Xerxes is going to get more time, which means the club won't buy a midfielder buy a striker. So I don't expect us to bring a striker in January. And who would we bring in anyway? So I think Xerxes is going to be at the club until the summer. He's not a player that's heading anywhere out in January. But to play devil's advocate for a moment, it's amazing the shift up that some of our fans have, because at halftime yesterday, the abuse Xerxes was getting was incredible. And I was saying, look, he hasn't had any game time. He's really, really rusty. I guarantee if you keep playing him, he'll get better. He then literally scored a great goal, which is all about technique, not fitness. I mean, Paul Scholes can do that. He can knock it up and volley it in. Like, that's technique, and Xerxes got technique. I still don't think, even with that goal, he's up to the speeds he can be if we keep playing him, because that's what match sharpness is. So I'm really pleased with Xerxy, and I'm hopeful that he's going to get a lot of game time over the next few weeks. And we're not playing the best teams in the league, so hopefully he can keep building confidence. And confidence and sharpness, as that grow, he should become more of an asset. But we've got to keep utilising him. There's no point in getting Xerxy to a point by New Year's Eve where he's regularly playing and he's sharp, and then everybody comes back and we're like, we're not using you again. I mean, let's be honest. People are glazing Xerxy and Amrim at the moment. Amrim wouldn't use him for 3 months. Wouldn't use him at all. And that's why he's been rusty. So Amrim has to take responsibility for why Xerxy's been so rusty in the first place. So hopefully we're going to see him play now. And I think he will be the reason we don't buy a striker and we don't move him on. But look, I feel like Xerxy's very misunderstood. I think there's a very, very good player there. I don't think he's a striker, for a start. I don't think that's what he is. I think he's almost out of position when we play him as their lead striker. But he does have qualities that almost make him a better 10 than he is a striker. But with no Sesko, I think you've got to play him there. And you know, I find it quite funny what he said after the game yesterday, actually. I think it was something along the lines of, I'm surrounded by great players and they make it easy for me and we help each other every day. And I thought, you know, and I think he said something about a good environment as well. And I thought, you know what? Is he talking out his arse there? I mean, like, I'm surrounded by great players and it's a good environment and we help each other every day. And I'm sort of like, you've just won against Crystal Palace after a shit first half and a terrible performance against Everton where you've not been anywhere near the team. And I'm like, but then I just think we've just won the game and they'll all be over Instagram and that's fine. I don't think he's in a great environment for his career and I don't think he's surrounded by great players. I actually feel quite sorry for Xerxy and Mainoo. I don't think they're in a great environment. I genuinely don't. I think they're in a quite a destructive environment for players like themselves who I still see Xerxy as a younger player. And I think the last 12 months, nearly 18 months, have almost been a handbrake on his career compared to the season he had at Bologna before that. So I think it's a credit to him that he's got a smile on his face and he speaks so glowingly about the club and the players and the manager, because actually, I think he's actually been, it's been a difficult 18 months for him. I mean, 18 months is a long period in your career. If you think that an average footballer plays for 15 years, you'd be quite lucky actually. So maybe 10 years at the top level, 18 months, a year and a half of that, it's over 10%, isn't it? So it's a considerable period of time where it's been very stop-start and he's not been in the manager's favour, really. And to score a goal like that, of that importance, and to still speak glowingly, I think it's a credit to the player and his mentality that he clearly sees the positive and praising the manager, praising the club, praising the players around him, when realistically, I don't think he's had the best treatment this season. And I think it's, you know, it's not been the best environment for him. So I think, as I've said, I think the criticism of Xerxy is a bit unfair. I think the circumstances lead to his poor performances. But if he can play every game between now and Christmas, I think he'll get better and better and better. I do think Ineos and the Glazers will use it as a reason not to buy a striker. And maybe that'll bite us on the arse. But I think Xerxy is a good player to have around. I do. I like Xerxy, I always have, and I think he's a good player to have around. Pa Lynch says, we tried to get a loan for Emi Martinez and Villa wouldn't do it. Teams don't loan to us. Unfortunately, we will need to buy. That's exactly what I was saying, Patrick, the voice of reason again. No, I think you're spot on. I think it's difficult for United to do loan deals for whatever reason. Yeah. Hitton says, January signings with no Premier League experience are a big risk. Works for City because their system is set. Amrim wants the right profiles, but expecting success is naive, says Hitton. I suppose that's the downside of an Ederson, is that you're bringing him into a league he's never played for, in a system he's never played, and that's high pressure. Whereas Conor Gallagher has played in the league and has played in a system where they use a back three. So, you know, maybe that is the better bet. Can't forget that we're only a sprained finger away from using Bienda again, says Slazy. Should look at a new backup keeper as well in January. Should, but won't. And Adam Hawkins says, if the four in the 3-4-3 were replaced, we would play better and win more. I think our long ball strategy is short term. Esteban was an opportunity missed, says Adam.
Thank you very much for that. Appreciate your super chats coming in. I want to talk about that point in a minute. Englishman in Calif says, hipster opinion, maybe, Mark, but I would take Damsgaard from Brentford over Gallagher. Highly underrated eight and probably a good price. And, well, I think it's a good point. I just don't think Brentford would do that deal. Sell Dalot, Ugarte and English Jemba Jemba Mainoo, says Mac. Come on. What about the Valverde rumour? He wants out, says Maz Rao Wow Wowie. I'm coming to that. Why does United not look at Damsgaard, says Jacob. Second person, Damsgaard's getting a glow up. There we go. So let me go to that story there that was alluded to. So this has come out from the Mirror this morning. Manchester United. Don't you just love having the Christmas tree back, by the way? You're going to miss it when it's gone. I, you know, when I put it up yesterday, I was like, we don't need it. But the minute it goes up, I'm like, oh, when that goes down, it's going to be so bare. It is a welcome addition to this show for a month. And we should be getting 1,000 likes within seconds just because of the Christmas tree. I do need to get some novelty. What if you can get some like novelty Man United ones? I mean, I'm talking, I don't want fucking Bruno on my tree or Casemiro. You know, and I tell you what, if Bruno was on my tree, he'd be up there, high up the tree in the number 10 position. He wouldn't be down here in the midfield. But no, I'm talking like, can we get some Beckham ones or Rooney ones? They must do them. I saw a Star Wars one yesterday, which was when Han Solo's there. He goes down and it comes back with him in carbonite and it's a Christmas tree decoration. I was like, oh my God. They've got to have some United ones. Anyway, smash a like for the Christmas tree. I don't deserve one. Man United are considering a move for Real Madrid midfielder Valverde. His clash with manager Alonso has prompted interest from several clubs. United would be willing to pay 80 million euros, but Madrid are expected to demand something closer to 100 million euros. I mean, I file this under utter bollocks. I mean, I really do. I do. And, you know, that's why I brought it into the show a little bit later. He's just turned 27, Valverde. I think he's a fantastic player. And I think at Manchester United, you would be all over it like icing on a Christmas cake. However, it does strike me as a load of bollocks. Because I don't think United would spend 80, 70 million pounds on a 27-year-old from Real Madrid. I just don't think we would do it. I agree with Red Devil 7595. If there was anything in this, surely you'd do a loan. Because from Real Madrid's point of view, if you're thinking about selling him, Real Madrid have always been a team that loans players. I mean, they did it with Casillas, didn't they? Sebios to Arsenal. I think Odegaard started off as a loan as well. So if there's one club that does loan players, it's Real Madrid. So I would say, if Real Madrid are serious about selling him, we're serious about buying him, but it's the January transfer window, let's do a loan deal. So Shane says I'd take Valverde over Gallagher. Mate, you and me both, 100%. So look, let's call bullshit on it, but if Real Madrid want to talk. Let's do a loan deal or something like that, because we're not going to be able to pay £80 million in January. The one story from Real Madrid that did catch my eye, though, and I did want to bring this in, because I think there's some genuine truth in this, is that, I think it was Caught Offside we're reporting it this morning. Liverpool are set to table a £52 million bid for Camavinga. The 23-year-old has only played around 30% of the minutes in the league under Alonso this season. Now, that's a player I would be looking at. Now, people are going to go injury, injury, injury. And I can't be a hypocrite. If his injuries... Look, Mason Mount's a good player. We never should have bought him. I know he scored the winner yesterday, but we never should have bought him. £55 million, 250 grand a week for a player that's never really fit. When you look at the last 2 years, it was a mistake, even though he's a good player. You can't just buy good players and then, you know, be aware of injury problems. So if Camavinga's injury record was scrutinised and we thought, you know, it's worth it, I think he's perfect for the Premier League. I really do. I think Camavinga's wasted at Real Madrid. I just don't think they know where to use him. Sometimes he's left back. Sometimes he's on the bench. I would be looking at that. I'd be looking at Camavinga. I think he's got that energy, that technique. You know, I mean, how old is Camavinga now? Because I'm telling you now, if he can get out of Real Madrid and get himself to a decent club where he's appreciated and he plays every week, I think there's a glow up there. He's 23. He's only just 23. So, yeah, look, if we're talking about Real Madrid midfielders, of course I would like Camavinga. But sorry, of course I would like Valverde, but Camavinga is where I would go. He's had a few injuries, to be fair. Let me have a look. God almighty. 24-25, knee injury, 45 days. Muscle injury, 17 days. Hamstring, 22. Hamstring, 75. And then ankle injury, 25. I mean, that's a lot. All I would say is a lot of those are different injuries and he is still very young. Look, you do a proper medical, don't you? You do a proper medical. If he can't do it, he can't do it. But I quite like that. And he's quick as well. I like the look of it. Mazrawawi says, what about a Wout Weghorst ornament on top of the tree? And Malachi, yeah, I see what you mean. Xerxes reminds me of João Pedro. Mate, have you watched João Pedro? João Pedro's lightning fast. I mean, Xerxes is not lightning fast. I don't think they're very similar at all. I think Xerxes is a very unique player. Do you not think with Joshua could kind of do something like what Newcastle have done with Joel Linton, if you know what I mean? No, I don't, Callum. I do not think that Xerxes is a midfield destroyer bully like Joel Linton at all. Look, I think Xerxes, in an Amrim system, he's only ever going to play really as a striker because I don't think he's got the mobility that he wants in the 10. That's why he doesn't use Bruno there. It's very clear that he wants these mobile players. Xerxes in this team is probably best served in the striker position, but I don't think that's really his best position. I think Xerxes would work best off a striker, but we don't really utilise that formation. But I still think he can be a useful player for us. I really, really do. I tell you what I did want to talk about, though. Just very, very quickly, I'll just get this in because it's there. The Times are saying that Barcelona sporting director Deco has said on loan Man United and England forward Rashford is happy at the club and they want to keep him if possible. They have this €30 million option to buy. And Rashford's been involved in 13 goals in 18 games since arriving at Camp Nou. So look, I mean, look, we should keep an eye on what's happening with our loanees. And I think that with Marcus Rashford, he's done well at Barcelona. And we've also heard that Barcelona might try and lower the price down with United. So, yeah, I think it's always a positive to hear that sort of thing, because other clubs might look at him as well. I wanted to just mention this from Amrim. This is where I was really heading. So what he said before the game yesterday was that we should have an Ahmad with a right foot to put on the other wing. Direct quote from Ruben Amrim before the game yesterday. We should have an Ahmad with a right foot to put on the other wing. Now, this sent some people into all sorts of, you know, conspiracy that we're going to go and sign Semenyu in the January transfer window. And maybe we are. Maybe we are. Certainly a player that could be on the move with a £65 million release clause. But I don't think that solves Man United's problem. I agree with Savage. This back five is killing us. I don't like the system at the moment. I don't mind a 3-4-3, but I can't stand the back five. It's a back five every game, and we're not utilising those wide players as wingers at all. So look, yeah, if you brought Semenyu, then you had him on the left and Ahmad on the right. It sounds like a really attacking team, but he's not played like that in the Prem, and I don't know whether we could play like that in the Prem, because if you had Semenyu and Ahmad as your wide players and Casemiro and Bruno as your midfield, you're putting a lot of defensive responsibility on three centre-backs. So I don't think we're ready for that. So I don't think Semenyu happens in January. But it's interesting that Amrim would actually come out and say he wants a right-footed Ahmad on the left-hand side, because we don't have one. And that is a hole in the team then, isn't it? We don't actually have a right-footed Ahmad who can play on the left. We don't. I was thinking about it. Is there anybody in that squad that is a right-footed Ahmad? And there isn't. There's nobody. We don't have anybody anymore. Rashford, Garnacho are former wingers that are right-footed, but they're not they're not at the club anymore. So is that another area of the team that needs to be improved? Well, it sounds like it, but I don't think we're going to do that in January. I also think it would be wrong to do that in January, because if you spent £60 million on a right-footed Ahmad for the left wing-back position, I'd be sort of like going, that's great and all, you know, fair play. But what about the midfield? Like, what about the midfield? That's where we've got to go first. So I think the interesting thing is he clearly wants to play inverted wing-backs. Ahmad is an inverted wing-back, and a right-footed left wing-back would be inverted. I think that's a shame when you've got a player like Sesko. I think the best crosses we put into the box tend to come from the right-hand side from Bruno or Casemiro, who both have a good right foot. And the best crosses we tend to put in from the left tend to come from Luke Shaw or Dorgu if they're on the pitch. And Sesko certainly benefits from the natural cross, but Amrin's another one of those inverted players who likes an inverted player. So, you know, obviously he's looking at that. Lacey's right-footed, but he's not an Ahmad yet, says Tom. No, I don't think he'd be doing that. Infamous Cam says, I would strong arm Newcastle for Hall and do the same with Porro from Spurs. We should keep Xerxes. Happy holidays, Mark. Let's win on Thursday, says Infamous Cam. Look, I'm banned from predicting after the Everton game. You know, I've taken a vow of no predictions. Monks take a vow of silence. Some people have asked me to do that. I think the streams would be quite boring. So I've taken a vow of not being allowed to do predictions. However, I can survey the scene and say that West Ham at home on Thursday without Paqueta and Wolves away next Monday is a very promising couple of fixtures. And then we've got Bournemouth at home, who are crap. So we've got three very good fixtures. Red says, well, it's working. We won. Yeah, I'm not allowed. I'm not saying West Ham easy win. I'm not saying Wolves easy win. I actually think Wolves, keep an eye on Wolves against Forest on Wednesday, because I've got a funny feeling Wolves might get their first points of the season on Wednesday, which would be good for us. It would be good for us because we don't want them to be going into that game desperately needing their first points under their new manager. But look, they're looking good. They're looking good with the next three fixtures. I think after that, it gets interesting with Villa and Newcastle, but the next three fixtures are good. But as we know, Everton at home was good, and look what happened there. I'm sure Madrid would take a swap deal. Valverde for Ugarte, Mark, says Raphael. Yeah, I'm sure they would as well. Wink, wink. Hi, Mark. I'm a London Red. I took my son through their game yesterday. Our fans were amazing. Also, to touch on the 8 p.m. last night, how can we play good football at the present when we need about four new players to suit the system, says Dead. The fans were amazing yesterday, as they always are. And I'm glad you got a win with your son, because that's always a risk, taking your kid to a Man United game. You never know. But I'm very pleased. So great atmosphere as well, and a great result. With regards to how we play good football at present when we are about four new players to suit the system, I think this is always going to be the divisive point, mate, because I think I did say your name, Dead7097. That this is always going to be the divisive point, because some people would agree with you and say, well, we can't play good football until he gets the right players. But then other people would say he's still got a squad of 20 and he can't play any style of football. Why does a manager need four more players to get he's still got seven players then that he should be able to get good football out of? Why does Sean Dyche get Forest playing how he wants them to play with no signings? Why did Emery get Villa winning in his style of football with no signings? So I think that that's always going to be the point, isn't it? Whether we should be getting some level of football with what he's got, or whether we have to wait for certain players to start to see some good football. And that's always going to be the debate point. Seth, I did miss yours because I actually thought I'd read it before. So I'm going to go back now and read it. Judging Amrin without giving him a full squad is not fair. I back him, but at the same time, he's not showing us a future by picking those two in the midfield. And it's a good point, Seth, and I think it fits in with what I said there. I think there's many of us out there that want to back Amrin, but we're starting to go, why after a year is the football so shit? Why after a year are you so reliant on long throw-ins and set pieces and corners? Why after a year are you still hitting long balls? Like, surely you can start to show a bit of a path to what you want to do. Stylistically, Or maybe he has got to wait for the players. I don't know. Are the next two games must win? West Ham without Paqueta and Wolves with 2 points. I mean, they are. I'm not going to say we are going to win them because I'll get in trouble for jinxing it, Ollie. They are must win games. They're should win games. And they are must win games. But it's Man United, so you never know. But of course they are. Wolves haven't won a game all season and have got 2 points. And West Ham, you know, are hovering around the relegation zone and we're at home. So they are must win games, yes. Absolutely. However, this is what Amrim had to say, and I wanted to bring this in. Have we got time? Yes, we have. He said, everything concerning our club is so big. It's so different from other clubs. You have to be very strong mentally. I also realise that there are still many things to change. It's tougher than I had imagined. So, look, that was said just before the game yesterday. He's basically saying it's the most difficult job in football, which I agree. He's basically saying that I knew the job was difficult, but it's a lot more difficult than I thought. And it's tougher than I thought. And there's loads of things I need to change. So, look, the enormity of the job, I think we sometimes ignore that even if you want to sack Amrim, the next guy is not going to come in and make a massive difference. The job is difficult. If Pep Guardiola had this job, he would struggle. It's a really, really difficult job. And sometimes it's, is it the right guy? No. Is the job difficult for anybody? Yes. Or is it the right guy? Yes. And the job just makes it very, very difficult. We don't know what that balance is. And it's always refreshing when a manager is there saying, look, it's difficult. What I want to see with Amrim, and I said this last night, is I'd just like to see a glimpse of an identity that I like. I want us to score every one of them. But I can't tell you how much it hurts me to see Dalot launching a long throw into the box. I fucking hate it. And I know we're not the only team doing it. But to me, and I'm not calling myself a football purist, every time I see a team launching long throws into the box, I'm like, what has our game become? I actually think there are leagues out there that would boo it on principle. And yet, we're doing it and other clubs are doing it. I don't know why we've gone back to this. It was ridiculed when I was growing up. It was booed when I was, you know, Millwall, Wimbledon, Stoke. And we're doing that. I understand why we're doing it because it's a percentage game and you might get a lucky flick here. But, and I don't mind if we do it coupled with some good football, but we're not playing any good football. And I do demand that. I want to see us play some good football. Like, that ultimately is secondary to results, I understand, but it's a big part of it. I do want to see it. And look, a lot of people say, I don't see the issue with long throw-ins. Mate, I'm not arguing with you if you don't see an issue with it. That's absolutely fine. But don't argue with me for saying I find it repulsive. It makes me want to throw up. I think it's anti-football. I think it's disgusting and I can't stand it. If you like it, that's fine. I respect that. But I hate it. So don't tell me I'm wrong for hating it. I don't like it. We were brought up to ridicule that. If you're of a certain age, we laughed at that. We laughed at Rory Delap. We laughed at Wimbledon. Look at this anti-negative football. It belongs in Jurassic Park. If you like it, that's fine. But I was brought up to, you know, turn my back on that and go, that is rubbish. That's like toe punting a shot. Why do you think nobody toe punts? Because you're taught not to do it. It's just, that's not how you kick a ball. That's, for me, it doesn't belong in football and I don't like it. Brentford do it, I don't like it, but, you know. Ladios says, great stream today. You have made it a great stream today. It's always because of you lot. Little behind, but do you think another Ahmad down the left would give defences more to worry about as our attacks mainly come down the right? Yes, I don't think we're particularly good down the left-hand side. I don't think people respect Dalot or Dorgu. And I think they let them free and they bank up on the right-hand side. I think you're right. So having more of a threat down the left-hand side would balance the side, 100%. Ray Carl Brown Amore is a legend. Hope you're doing well, Ray. He says, I think it's easy for teams like Forest to play defensive football because they have to. Amrim's stuck in two places. He has to win games, don't concede, and play attacking football. Yeah, and at the moment, he's prioritising winning games however he can. He can't play attacking football. But also, I don't think Amrim's should be responsible for the fact that we can't play against the low block. We scored 2 goals from set pieces yesterday. I heard somebody say we created loads of chances. I don't remember loads of chances. I don't remember loads of chances. We scored from two set pieces. I don't remember loads of chances from open play. If Crystal Palace had defended those set pieces better, I don't know whether we win that game, you know? So we've got this inherent problem with the low block, and it's not Amorim's fault. Ten Hag had it. Ollie had it. We're just not very good against the low block. But West Ham will play a low block. So hopefully at some point we can start to learn how to do it. Absolutely. Thank you very much this morning. Really enjoyed it. Hope you have as well. We are back at 2 o'clock and we have... it's a busy week this week. We have got an 8 o'clock tonight. There's no football tonight, is there? We have got an 8 o'clock show for you tonight, yeah, as well. So I will see you for that too. Make sure you smash a like and subscribe. Also got a bonus Premier League predictions with me and Robbie on That's Football going up at midday for the midweek games as well. So get yourselves out involved in that. Thank you, everybody. As always, you've made the morning show feel like an 8 o'clock show, which it's not meant to, but I take it as a bonus. So thank you, everybody, this morning. Some brilliant comments and interaction. And I'll speak to you all in a bit. Take care. Coffee time. Coffee time. Get the kettle on. It's coffee time. Whoop, whoop, whoop.